You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. Greetings, this is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we are your Master Gardener hosts for In the Garden with Master Gardeners. And today, Tina, we're going to be talking about February. There's so much stuff going on in February. What do you do in February?
Gosh, you know, I think a lot of people, especially if they come from other parts of the country, think that, oh, February is still winter, and so there's not much to do in the garden. But in California, there's a whole lot to do in the garden because we're going to be getting ready for our big switch to warm season plants come March. So in February, there's a lot to do to get ready.
A lot of preparation.
Yeah. And also because our fruit trees come out of dormancy, our deciduous fruit trees come out of dormancy a lot earlier than they might in other areas of the state and the country, there's some things that we need to do with our fruit trees to get them off to a great start so that we have good harvests.
You know, days are getting longer. It's hard to notice, but they are getting longer, and they're saying that, and nature knows before we do.
Yeah, absolutely. In Southern California, spring is actually kind of February. I know, as I've talked in months previous to this, planting, if you plant bulbs in the fall for our spring bloom, February is when our spring bloom for the bulbs takes place. So it's actually one of my favorite months in my garden because all of the iris and the ranunculus and freesias and all of that kind of stuff are blooming in February, and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous month in the garden.
You know, Tina, I find out if I just listen to what you say, my garden's going to turn out
well. Well, I don't know about that. But
Tina has the most beautiful garden 12 months a year, and it's just amazing how it happens. Well, you're very diligent about what you do.
Well, and I think one thing that I've learned to accept is that, you know, some months are better than others. And when you go through, if you take pictures of your garden every month, which I love to do, it's kind of fun when you have something, you know, cool blooming or cool food that you've grown. It's fun to take those pictures. And so in the wintertime, when in the late fall when we've just been brutalized by heat, it's kind of fun to go back and look at those pictures and say, oh yeah, I remember. My garden does look really cool in February or April or, you know, whatever month it is. Or yeah, in July I had the most amazing tomatoes. So when you're feeling a little low in any particular month, you know, take some pictures and look back, and it'll get you inspired and ready to go out again.
Investment now for a future day.
Yeah, exactly. So even though the beginning of February may not look like, you know, there's a whole lot happening in your garden, it's coming. It's really going to be a fun, active time in the weeks ahead.
You know, one thing I've learned from you, Tina, is prep. You know, just get ready, and you might not see what you're doing right now, but if you do it right now, your later is going to be better.
Absolutely.
And you keep doing that, prepping ahead of time every month for future months, and then the future months just turn out beautiful. Or sometimes I don't think about it, and then I'm like, well, my garden's not that great. And then I'm like, well, Tina thought about that 3 or 4 or 5 months ago, and it's blooming.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we'd want to do this radio show and do the, you know, what to do in the garden every month, because we have such busy lives, and, you know, if you aren't able to garden full time, you know, you're squeezing it in. And so that's one of the reasons we love to do this show, is we can give you your hit list, and you're not going to get them all done, but at least you can pick the ones that are important to you and move on with those.
Exactly. So why don't we talk about February?
Yeah. So I want to start with edibles, if it's okay today.
Oh, I love edibles. So please.
Yeah. And the reason I want to start with edibles is we're coming up in March to the time when we switch from our cool season veggie gardens to our warm season veggie gardens. And so to be ready to do that in March, we have some prep that we can do in February to get ourselves, you know, ready to hit the road running in March. And so what we need to be doing, first of all, is thinking about what we want to plant in the warm season. And tops on most everybody's list probably are tomatoes. And so if you like to grow things from seed and you want to try some tomato varieties that are probably not available at the local nursery, you know, because the local nurseries can only stock so many types of tomatoes. The beginning of February, right away, look in those seed catalogs, look online, find the tomato varieties that you think you want to start from seed, and get those seeds started right away. Because the seeds that you start now, and you would do it indoors, will be ready to plant out in the garden about mid-March to the end of March. And so if you do want to grow things from seed, you don't want to waste any time. You want to get those seeds ordered and planted in the first part of February.
Let me ask you a couple of questions, Tina. Those, well, first of all, those seed catalogs, I'm now addicted.
Aren't they fun?
Oh, my gosh. The hardest part is deciding.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of us have already gotten seed catalogs, but if we haven't gotten the seed catalogs, can we go online to the places that have seed catalogs and just order online?
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, and my daughter gets mad at me because I have all these catalogs. Oh, Mom, you're wasting all these trees. You know, you should just be doing this online, which is, you know, maybe true a little bit, but I think it's a pretty, you know, harmless activity to have a few seed catalogs. But absolutely, they're all available online, and there's numerous ones, and you know, it just depends on, you know, which are your favorites. They all have fabulous.
So even if you don't,
info.
The point I'm trying to make is, even if you don't have your catalog, here it is February, and if you think about ordering it and wait for the catalog coming in, time is going on, and then you have to start planting and getting your stuff, you don't have to do that this
No.
time. You can actually just, as much fun it is as getting a catalog, you don't have to get a catalog. You could just go online and see what they have and order some seeds now.
Absolutely. And the other option, too, is to go to your local nursery. Most of the better nurseries have, and even the big box retailers will have seed racks that have, you know, a number, dozens and dozens of seed packages. But usually in a store, they're only going to carry maybe, you know, half a dozen varieties of tomato, if you're lucky. So if you really want to try something particular, there's an heirloom like Brandywine that you want to get, or Cherokee Purple or something like that, you may have to order that variety online.
You know, also sometimes people think, oh my goodness, I don't need 75 tomatoes or whatever it is. But the price you get these seed packages for is so small, you can hardly even buy a plant for that.
Yeah.
And if you don't use it all, give it to a friend. Or
absolutely. Seeds will keep for a couple of years if you store them properly, and that means in a dark, cool place. You know, you don't want to keep them in the garage where it heats up to 100 degrees. You don't want to keep them someplace where they're going to get moist, so you can't. I mean, I have a little greenhouse. My husband always wants to put all of my garden stuff in the greenhouse, and I keep telling him, you can't put seed packets in the greenhouse. It's too damp. They're not going to, you know, they're going to want to germinate right away in that damp area. So if I want to save seeds, I have to hide them from him in a cool, dark place. but Katrina's right. You're not going to use that whole seed packet, but the seed packets go from anywhere from $2 to $4 for a packet of seeds. A single tomato plant is going to cost you that anyway. So, you know, decide what you want to do. It's perhaps a lot easier to just go ahead and buy the transplants already started at a local nursery. There are nurseries that have, you know, beautiful selections, way more than they used to. I mean, I remember 10 years ago, you know, there were like four varieties of tomatoes you could get at a nursery. And now nurseries have a lot better selection. And you can go to events like Green Scene at Fullerton in the spring, and they'll have tons of different varieties of tomatoes and peppers. And so you can wait and not do them from seed. But if you like doing things from seed, or you want that specific variety that you're not sure you're going to be able to find, then by all means, get started on those seeds in the beginning of February.
No, I also thought Fullerton Arboretum, people can look up, because I believe it is in March, is it, that Fullerton Arboretum has their huge tomato sale.
I think so.
And if you miss planting it for seed, or you just don't feel like it, that's another place to get some wonderful, wonderful choices of tomatoes.
And there's an event called Tomato Mania that kind of travels around to different nurseries. And so you can also take a look and see if that's going to be in your area and go there. And they have enormous numbers of varieties.
Great. So let's get back to if we're going to plant some. It's February. What do we do?
So to start seeds, You want to start with a seed starting mix is my preference. If you don't have a seed starting mix, which comes in a bag that you can get from a nursery, you can just use a new bag of potting soil. And the reason we want new bags is because seeds are delicate little things. We don't want the medium that they're in to be contaminated with any fungi or anything like that. So don't use an old bag of soil that you had from last year, because who knows what's gotten in there. So get a fresh bag, get clean containers. I just recycle old six packs and I just wash them in a solution of 10 parts water to 1 part bleach. You can also get seed starting kits, which include a little flat that has a clear dome, plus the little seed pack trays, cells. And those are nice because the little clear dome traps the moisture and acts as a mini greenhouse, so you get a
nice warmth in there.
Nice warm environment. So yeah, and then just follow the directions on the seeds. The key to starting seeds is don't ever let them dry out. They have to stay moist and warm.
And depending on how cold your house gets, you might want to have a heating pad underneath it. Or if you can't put it, I don't have places with good sun, you might want to have a light.
Yeah, there's stuff that you can buy, and you can go online and look for seed starting supplies, and you'll get catalogs that have all of that stuff. I do have a seed starting mat, and it's just like a little heating pad that you put under it, and it just gives a little bottom warmth. Excuse me. So that's good. And then once they do germinate inside, you want to leave them inside to grow until they're a couple of inches tall and have several sets of leaves. And then you'd want to move them outside, but in a sheltered area for a few days. That's called hardening off. You don't want to just take them from inside and then plop them right in the ground.
Shock them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, putting your kid outside without a sweater on or something. Yeah, it's actually pretty easy to do, and it's so rewarding. And if you have kids, I mean, it's a wonderful project for kids to see that process from seed to plant is really miraculous for them to watch.
Right, and if you do it now, you probably don't have any worries about frost in this area. By the time they get big enough, we're more than likely past that, but let's see what happens in the next month or so.
Yeah, our official, you know, last frost date, depending on what you read, is March 1st to March 15th. So if you're starting your seeds indoors in February, they're going to grow until towards the end of March, I mean, the end of February in your house, and then you're going to move them maybe to your patio under a patio cover. Yeah, if you do hear that you've put your seeds outside in early March and we're getting some bizarre frost,
El Nino,
bring them inside overnight so that they don't get zapped.
Then literally a week.
Yeah, they're just babies.
They're babies.
So yeah, and it's not just tomatoes, of course. You can start, you know, all kinds of warm season vegetables. Peppers, there's wonderful varieties of peppers. If you like and want to try some more exotic varieties of peppers, you can try those. I would wait to start any of the squashes until a little bit later, because those seeds usually grow pretty quickly and want to be planted outside pretty quickly. So I would wait until the end of February if you're going to plant any squash seeds in six packs. And squash family would be pumpkins, zucchini, watermelon. Any of those are cucumbers. Yeah, any of those vining big guys. And actually, I don't start those personally in six packs. I direct sow those seeds. And so I wait until the end of February or the beginning of March. And I actually sow those directly in the ground where I want them to grow.
Gotcha. How about flowers, Tina?
Oh, gosh. There are some great flowers that you can start from seed. One of the things I like to start from seed are the zinnias. And the reason I like to start zinnias from seed is, for some reason in the nurseries, you can only get you can't get single colors. You know, you get six packs, but they're all mixed colors. And I love to have in my garden a kind of a, what would you call it, a wave or a flush of color that I control, not, you know, one pink, one yellow, one orange, one white, because I just think that doesn't give you a real impressive floral show. Instead, I think it's great to decide that you want to combine an orange and a yellow for your scheme in a particular area. And I love zinnias because you can get them in all different heights. They can be, you know, from 6 inches to 4 feet tall.
You know what I've noticed? That it's hard to find the tall ones in the nursery. And
absolutely.
Tina, you have the most beautiful tall zinnias. They're just stunning. And they're tall and they're beautiful. And then you cut them and bring them into the house. And it's just, she's lighting up right now as we're talking.
Katrina knows I'm addicted to flowers. And I, you know, the ones you can get at the nursery are lovely in the 6-pack, but a lot of them don't ever get any bigger than that. You know, they stay like 6 to 12 inches tall.
Yours are huge.
Because I start them from seed. I get the varieties that are tall.
And you get the varieties that are tall, and when people come over, they ooh and all, like, where did you get these plants? And a lot of them, I think Tina's secret is that she plants them by seed.
I do. And I start those, again, indoors in 6-packs. And then I, you know, move them outside and let them, you know, grow on a counter that I have out in the backyard until they're tall enough to plant in the ground. But I only do easy ones. That's the other thing. I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can try and grow from seed. You know, you can grow delphinium and foxglove and, you know, other things from seed. But a lot of those take a long time to produce flowers. And so I kind of stick to the stuff that's quick and fast and easy. And cosmos are one of my favorites, and there are tall varieties of cosmos. That's actually the first seed I ever planted. My mom gave me a packet when I was 8, and so it's all her fault. That's how I got hooked on gardening.
And if you do it by seed, you can get more of the exotic-looking ones.
You can get the exotic-looking ones, and again, when you go to the nursery to get a 6-pack, odds are the 6-pack of cosmos is going to have the dark pink, the light pink, and the white all mixed together.
And kind of a purple and
exactly.
Or a lavender.
Yeah, and so, you know, and that's nice, but they might also be the dwarf ones that only get, you know, 18 inches tall, whereas I like the ones that get 3 to 4 feet tall. And then I order the seeds that are, you know, I'll get one packet of white seeds and I'll get one packet of the dark purpley ones because I really like that combination together, that contrast. And so then I can do a swath of the white ones and I can do a swath of the purple ones somewhere else. And that way you get to control what your flower garden looks like instead of just having these multiple colors, you know, a hodgepodge kind of everywhere.
So what you do, Tina, is you think ahead, and you plan this, and you plan, when you see Tina's garden, it just looks spectacular. It just looks spectacular, but then they look exotic because they're coming from seeds, and they're not common, but you do stuff that's easy to grow. So you combine that so there's less work and more beauty.
Absolutely. You know, the older I get, you know, the less inclined I am to dig up entire, you know, beds. That's just a lot of work. And so I do have a lot of perennials, and we'll talk about perennials in a second because spring is a great time to plant perennials. But I also have little pockets in between all the perennials and shrubs that I turn over every season. So, you know, I'll have maybe a 2 by 4 foot, you know, area that over the summer will have zinnias, and in the winter will have, what have I got out in my garden? You know, bachelor buttons or, you know, some other cool season, snapdragons or some other cool season flower. So there is a little planning involved, but I'm not a designer, and Katrina's compliments are really nice, but I plan ahead just in terms of, you know, when to plant things, and I don't actually draw out a plan saying, you know, that I'm going to have this color here and that color there, because I get too excited when I go through the seed catalogs and to the nursery, and so then I just start bringing random stuff home. But you have a general idea, you know, like if you know you like whites and purples, or, you know, yellows and oranges, or pink and white, or whatever, then you can include those purchases, you know, when you're going to make your choices.
And then, you know, also do it a bite at a time. Tina, that she plans ahead, but you just take a little section at a time and just you make sure you get something done. Where a lot of us have these grandiose plans and none of it happens. And you just go, well, I had all these grandiose plans and I didn't get time. where you could take a section of time, whatever it is, and say, I'm going to plant this one package of seeds.
Yeah, and so what I do is, you know, you order the seeds from the catalog, and then you say, okay, I got a couple hours on Friday. Friday's going to be my day to plant seeds in six packs, and then I'm going to spread them out over this counter that I have in my house that my husband loves. And they're going to germinate and sit there for a few weeks until they get a few inches tall, and then I can move them outside. So, you know, you just identify the task that needs to be done and a chunk of time that you've got to do it, and then go ahead and do it. And if you don't have time to do seeds, you know, no big deal. You just go to the nursery when you're ready to plant out your warm season stuff in March. And one of the things that I think is great, especially if you want to have flower beds that are appealing to you, is, and we've talked about this before, is think about the thriller, filler, spiller technique. For people like me who are not natural designers, it's just a really great guiding principle.
Okay, tell those who don't know what it is, what that is.
Yeah, so you want to pick in any pot that you're planting or any section of a flower bed, you want to have a thriller, which means something either tall or has a beautiful bloom, something that's really going to catch your eye. Then you want to have a filler, which is something perhaps a little medium height growing, maybe has smaller flowers that aren't quite as bold. And then you want to have a spiller, which is something that you would put low in the front of a pot that's going to spill over the edges. Or if it's a flower bed, it's going to, you know, spill into the stepping stones or, you know, the pathway or whatever. And by having those three different components, you're going to create something that's really appealing to the eye. So, for instance, if we decided we were going to do tall zinnias, and I chose a bright orange zinnia that's going to get 3 to 4 feet tall, I might pair that then with a filler of a medium height cosmos that gets about 24 to, you know, 28 inches tall. So it's going to be a step below that orange zinnia. And then in the very front, I might put a blue lobelia as my spiller. So it just, you know, you can see, you don't have to be a great artist. It doesn't have to be rocket science. You just think about, you know, colors that you like together that, you know, appeal to your eye, and maybe some different heights.
And you can do this either in your ground or in a pot.
So you can do it either. And you can do it with any kind of plant, like with succulents. I have a succulent pot at my front door, and I've got this beautiful purple aeonium, you know, that's probably 18 inches tall, right? And then I have it surrounded by some, I don't even remember what they're called, but, you know, by a kind of a gray-green succulent that contrasts really nicely with that purple aeonium. And then to spill over the sides, I have one of those lime green sedums, you know, that just kind of flows over the edge. So you can follow this thriller, filler, spiller philosophy for any type of plant, even vegetable pots. You know, I do it with, if I'm planting a tomato in a big pot, how fun is it to have the tomato be your thriller, put a really cool obelisk so that it has something to climb up that's pretty, and then around the edges you can put some herbs, you know, use a parsley for your filler, and then use you know, a trailing thyme to, you know, be your spiller that falls over the edge. And now all of a sudden you've got a vegetable pot that is also really pretty and decorative to look at.
Love it.
So it's a cool philosophy to follow.
And
regardless.
You can make it really simple, or you can go more complicated on it. And you could even buy your plant. You don't have to grow these things from seed. You could buy plants, stick them in there, make great gifts. They look good at the front door. Your door looks wonderful.
Thanks.
You know, and that you have them there. And I don't think there are a lot of maintenance to take care of either.
Oh, gosh, no. That's why I went to succulents for the front walkway.
Is because it always looks good.
It always looks good. And as you travel and you don't want to keep bugging somebody to water your pots for you, you know, they survive for a week or so on their own. So, yeah, but let's get back to edibles a little bit. And what you need to take a look at in your vegetable garden, if you did do cool season veggies, you're still going to have scads of lettuces and peas and maybe some root vegetables that are continuing to grow. But as those get harvested, so for instance, you know, as your lettuce starts you know, we've been harvesting our outer leaves, but eventually, you know, we'll be ready to just harvest the whole plant and use that head of lettuce. So in my vegetable garden, which is just three raised beds, it's not that big, I will start planning on which section of my lettuce I'm going to start harvesting so that I'm making room for those warm season, you know, veggies to come in. And as the peas start to poop out, you know, I'm going to rip those out and save that trellis area for my tomatoes when the tomatoes are ready to go in. So as you transition from your cool season to your warm season stuff, just be thoughtful about, you know, how you're going to harvest, how you're going to leave spaces for your new warm season veggies.
You know, I have something to add to that.
Yes.
And I love my vegetable garden, but I have a few years ago, I start planting my veggies along with my flowers.
I love that.
And it is beautiful. Some vegetables are just so gorgeous. And, you know, you have a pepper plant out with your other flowers. And, you know, people don't know what it is because it's with your flowers. So when you're looking around, think about, do I want to stick a vegetable in here? Because I had some of you didn't know what a cauliflower looked like, and they thought I had the most beautiful flower. They couldn't figure out what
it
was
fun.
Because it was in with the roses and the salvia, and they didn't know what it was. It just looked funny there, but it was beautiful. So as you're getting ready for your warm season, you could also stick a vegetable or two along with your flowers, and it's kind of neat, and I stick flowers along with my vegetables sometimes in my vegetable garden, and it's
absolutely
fun too.
Yeah. I love putting a little border of marigolds around my raised beds that where I grow the veggies. It's just fun to have a little bit of color and flowers going in there with the veggies. So
don't be afraid to mix and match a bit.
No,
as long as
not
the water needs are the same, you know, it's fun.
It is. It's really fun. The other thing to mention this month too is our fruit trees. They're going to be waking up. The deciduous fruit trees are going to be waking up. And hopefully you sprayed them, dormant sprayed them in January. If you did not, and it's real early February, you can try and dormant spray them with a horticultural oil or a fungicide that would prevent fungal diseases. But mainly what you're going to want to start doing in February is you're going to want to start fertilizing, because you're going to see the buds starting to swell in your plants. And it's a good idea in February to get down some organic fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
The organic fertilizers take a little longer to work than the synthetic fertilizers. And so February is a good time to get them down on the ground, let them get watered in by any, you know, rains that we're getting.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. And then as the soil starts to warm up, as we get into March, those fertilizers will really take effect. And they'll be there for the plants when they're starting to wake up and produce that new leaf and that bud growth. And, of course, on the fruit trees, the blossoms, which are going to be what give us our fruit.
You know, a lot of times people forget about it. You know, they forget about it, but it's so important. And if you're going to be taking care of that fruit tree or that plant, give it a little bit of nourishment, and it's going to pay off tenfold.
It really will. And for the citrus trees, which are evergreen, they really want you to start feeding them this month. And the other thing to do with the citrus trees, especially, unlike the deciduous trees, which drop all their leaves, the citrus trees, of course, keep their leaves. They just drop them, you know, a few here and a few there. But what that means is that we often have overwintering pests on mm-hmm. our citrus trees. And so it's a good idea this month to take, hopefully we're going to get a lot of rain, and maybe the rain will take care of this for you. But what often happens is the pests will stay on the underside of the leaves. And so when the rain comes down and washes off the tree, it's not getting to the underside of the leaves. So what I like to do in February to knock down these pest populations before they really grab hold is I like to take that brass nozzle that you put on your hose, you know, mm-hmm. the one that you can twist and get a really mm-hmm. strong jet of water. And I like to go out to my citrus trees and just really squirt them off and aim that jet of water up under the leaves to knock off, you know, any overwintering pests that are on their aphids or cottony scale or, you know, whatever you might have. And then the key to being low pest on citrus trees is to control the ants. if you can keep the ants out of your citrus trees, because they are just these little farmers. They're little ranchers. They like to herd, you know, aphids and other of these insects that produce this sweet substance for their food. And so they literally farm them. So if you can keep the ants away from your citrus trees, then they will be a lot healthier and have a lot less pest problems.
You know, also on our website, our show, we have a whole program on ants. So if you want to look up at our website, just check it out, and we will tell you all the different ways how to take care of ants in your garden. And it's also your garden, it's in your house, and we have Dr. John Kawashima talking about it, and he's like our bug expert. So do check us out online or on our website, and we will tell you all about that. It's about a half-hour show, and it's a half-hour or an hour, I don't remember. But it covers ants and those type of pests, so that might be something nice to listen to.
Yeah, and absolutely. And one thing you can do on your citrus trees for ants is you can apply Tanglefoot, a product called Tanglefoot, to the trunk. And what I do is I wrap something, usually an old sock that I cut up, and wrap that around the trunk, and then I spread the Tanglefoot on the sock. It's a sticky substance. It doesn't look the coolest, but I'd rather have the ants under control than worry about how cool it looks. And what happens is as they climb up the trunk, they hit this Tanglefoot stuff and they stick to it, and that keeps them away. The other thing that I do, and it perhaps looks better, is those ant stake, you know, baits.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the bait stations of some kind and you put those, you know, around, hopefully the ants will be attracted to those bait stations, take the bait back to the nest, and then kill the colony, or at least keep it under control. So, yeah, but do try to keep the ants under control, and do fertilize the citrus starting in February. You're going to get a, you know, big flush of growth, and you'll want to have nutrients there.
Nutrients. Yeah. Hey, Tina, I need to take a moment and tell our listening audience that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and also the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Well, there we are. Now what should we talk about, Tina?
Well, you know, before we get off fruit trees, I just remembered we forgot to tell people one last thing to do for the fruit trees. Mulch.
I love mulch.
And just to remind you, we talk about mulch a lot, but if you're new to the show, mulching is what we recommend is using an organic mulch, which just means it can be the shredded bark, it can be compost, but basically something that was once living that has now been processed into a bag form, or you can also buy mulch in bulk. But you want to spread about a 3 or 4 inch layer under your fruit trees, and keep it about a foot away from the trunk, because you don't want the mulch to touch the trunk. But just to refresh everybody's memory, the reason you want to do this is several reasons. First, it's going to keep your weeds down. Secondly, it's going to keep the water from evaporating from the soil. So in times of scarce water, it's always good to have mulch so that you save water.
We're enjoying our water right now, but it's not always there.
Right. Then it also regulates the soil temperature, so it keeps the soil from getting too hot and too cold, which is less stressful on the plant. And then finally, as it decomposes, it adds nutrients to the soil for your fruit tree. So mulch, after you fertilize and have your tree all washed off, your final step is to lay down some mulch.
And you will have a very happy tree.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
And you can think of us when you eat the fruit and make jam and all of that kind of fun stuff.
You know, those of us who have fruit trees, it is amazing what a little bit of nurturing about what we produce out of it, the difference in production of the tree with just a little bit of nurturing.
Well, and what's funny is how much it means to you and to other people. My daughter was home for a couple of weeks over Christmas, and I squeezed fresh orange juice for her every morning. Oh my gosh, you would have thought I was giving her, you know, gold coins. Mm-hmm. Every morning. She just, you know, was so excited to have her fresh squeezed orange juice. So I don't know, it wouldn't have been the same if I had bought the oranges at the supermarket. The fact that I went out and picked them off the tree and squeezed them was pretty special.
Yeah, we have a huge harvest this year. We have oranges and tangerines, and I just can't believe how many lemons. And it's just nice to give it to people.
It
feels
is.
Good to share it, and there's a plethora there.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of nurturing, you get so much back. And if you're going to have the tree anyways, take care of it.
Yeah, it's fun. And you'll be rewarded with a little care. You'll see how much better your tree does. I know in Southern California, we see so many sad citrus trees. You know, almost no leaves or yellow leaves. And it's because they're not getting enough nitrogen and maybe not enough water. And so yeah, if we give them just a little TLC, they'll give a lot back.
Indeed. Well, you know what, Tina? How about if we talk about natives right now?
Yeah, let's do that because February is one of our last good months to plant natives and drought-tolerant plants. We like to give them a couple of months of cool weather and perhaps, hopefully, some natural rainfall to really settle them in before the heat of summer comes. So although you can continue to plant natives, you know, into April or so, I prefer to do it in February in the hope that we're going to get a little bit more rain in February and March and that they really get settled in before the heat of summer comes.
Before they get stressed.
Yeah, exactly. So
they get used to their environment.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
And just because we do seem to be getting some El Nino rains this year, it doesn't mean that our drought will be over. Doesn't mean that our water districts will end our allocations. I think tiered pricing is probably going to be maybe a permanent feature of our water bills. So it's good for us to identify those areas of our yard that we may want to have, you know, less thirsty plants in. And then, you know, like I'm not going to give up all my roses, but what I do have is I've got a ton of my landscape in drought tolerant. And then I still can have a little area where I can have, you know, things that require a little bit more water. So if you haven't already planted natives or drought-tolerant plants, February is a good month to do so. Just remember that you need to group these plants together. So you can't mix natives with your water-hungry plants because you won't be able to keep both types happy.
One will thrive and one won't. Or actually, in my case, when I tried to do that, neither one was happy.
Yeah.
I didn't give one enough water and I gave the other one too much water.
Exactly. So if you're going to redo a section of your yard to drought-tolerant or native plants, by all means do so this month. It's also the other reason to do it this time of year is that a lot of them are blooming. If you choose flowering native shrubs, oh my gosh, they're in bloom in February. And so it's a great time to go to the nurseries that specialize in that kind of product and see what you're going to get and be excited, you know, by it. Because if you go shop, you know, in October for your natives, you may not really have a clue what they're going to look like when they're in full bloom. So great time to go see what you're going to get.
And remember, if you're going to do drought tolerant, do a section at a time. Don't mix and match throughout your yard. Find an area with it that the watering system is all the same and just do that one area.
Exactly.
And if you have time, do another area.
Yeah. So what Katrina's saying is, you know, you look at your irrigation station that services the area that you're going to redo and say it's irrigation station 3, you know, double check where those sprinklers come on in irrigation section 3. Valve number 3, and that's the area, you know, that you should plant at a time. And then if you want to move on to another area, identify what valve that is, 4 or 5, whatever, and just make sure you're going to be able to set those valves to a time that is appropriate for irrigating those types of plants.
Exactly.
But you can create some amazing, beautiful gardens. And if you want to go to a website that has tons of examples and lists of plants, go to bewaterwise.com. Also, if you visit almost all water district websites now, they have a lot of information on how to convert to a drought-tolerant landscape. I know mine, Irvine Ranch Water District, is a great resource.
Yes. It's got some great pictures in there. It gives you ideas. It's got sample yards.
Right.
You just look and look and look and find, make a list of what you like. And then you also have to be careful. When you buy a plant small, it gets bigger. So definitely look how big the plant's going to be before you stick it in the ground.
Right.
That's many of times, many people, including myself, have loved a plant and didn't realize how big it's going to get.
Yeah, we planted sycamores at this house where we live now 11 years ago. Yeah, they're on their way to being 100 feet tall eventually. But they're sure 30 feet plus right now, so beware of natives because they can really take off if they like where they're planted.
Yeah, well, you can tell yours really like where they're planted. They're growing.
They do, don't they? I think they found groundwater.
You know, you knew that creek, too.
I am, yeah.
They have found groundwater.
They definitely have, yeah. Because the drought isn't slowing them down at all.
No, they look really, really happy.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, as Katrina said, you know, be sure you're looking at the label on the plant, talking to the nursery person, or getting online and double-checking the size of that plant that you're purchasing. But gosh, our natives and other drought-tolerant plants can produce a fabulous-looking yard. You do not need to have grass. In fact, these yards are much more interesting-looking, and they provide fabulous habitat. You'll see so many birds and butterflies when you convert to that type of a landscape.
You know, and too, look, Tina's neighborhood has a lot of basically drought-tolerant plants, and every house is unique, and every house is beautiful, and all year round, it's intriguing to look at.
Yeah, it's really interesting because this was a new community 11 years ago, and the builder had requirements, a plant palette that you used that was a lot of natives and other drought-tolerant plants and no front lawns. And so it's been pretty cool to have a whole neighborhood with no front lawns.
Oh,
we were ahead of our time.
Yes,
yeah.
And it's beautiful driving up here.
Yeah.
I think it really adds to the property, it adds to the houses.
It's kind of funny now everybody's on that bandwagon, but we've been doing it for a long time.
And your water bill shows it too.
Yeah. It's a lot better. But having said that, I do still have, I'm a flower, you know, nut, as Katrina has attested to. And so I do plant a little bit of color. I have two beds in my backyard that are devoted to roses and other seasonal color. So can I talk about roses for a minute?
Oh, yes. She's lighting up again. That smile on her face. Okay.
So, of course, last month, being the good rose person that I am, I pruned all of my roses. If you didn't get around to it, try doing it in early February. And the reason that we do that in California is a couple. First of all, in other parts of the country where it gets cold, roses naturally go dormant. But in California, it doesn't get cold enough for our roses to get dormant. And so we force them into dormancy by pruning them. And the other reason we do that is if we don't, they grow so many canes and they get so wild and tangled up in themselves that they cease being very healthy, and you get smaller blooms and so on and so forth. So that's a couple of reasons why we prune them. So this month in February, they're going to be starting to put out a ton of new growth. And when you prune your roses, you don't fertilize them at the time of pruning. What we do is we do dormant spray them. That is always a good idea. Again, the same as dormant spraying a fruit tree. Use either a horticultural oil or a fungicide. And what it does is it just kills any overwintering insects, fungal spores, so that you get less powdery mildew, less black spot, less rust. But when they start sending out their new growth in February, new leaves, then you want to put down some fertilizer for those lucky roses and allow that fertilizer to be watered in either through rains or your irrigation. And then, of course, come April, you'll have those fabulous flushes of blooms that we all love. So our roses will just be stunning if we give them a little fertilizer this month. And gosh, I love that first flush of roses. It seems like that flush is always the best bloom, I think, you know, the first one of the year. They're just so perfect.
Perfect, and you're so excited to see them.
That's probably it, too. Yeah, so you do want to fertilize your roses this month. And also, if we don't keep getting are nice rains, then you'll want to be sure that those are irrigated, because roses are somewhat drought tolerant. Actually, I really cut back on my watering this last year, you know, over that super hot summer we had.
Oh yeah.
And my roses are fine. You know, they bloomed less, but they sure didn't die. So I think roses are, you know, fairly drought tolerant. Mm-hmm. But if you want them to have that really pretty full first flush of bloom and the rain stops, then you'll want to have your sprinklers, you know, pick up a little bit of the slack so that you get a really nice bloom flush.
Pick and choose.
Yeah,
you
pick
know,
and choose.
I saw you do that in your yard.
Yeah.
You know, pick and choose of what you want. I have some hydrangea, which just
ooh,
suck up water.
Ooh, those like water. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
For
I
sure.
Suck up water. Well, I had seven and I have three now. And the reason why I have three now is I decided my hydrangea just gets the water out of the sink in the shower. And so my bucket's full. Those were, I just had to save some, and that's where, you know, that was why I picked and chose. And they looked a little not so good during the summertime, but, oh, they're going to be fine. I mean, and I don't have seven anymore. I have three, because that's what my shower and my sink
could feed or water.
Yeah.
Well, before we leave roses, if folks are looking to plant a few new roses, you know, January is always what we call bare root season, and that's a great time to plant bare root roses. But if you missed bare root season and you still want to get a couple of roses in your garden, you can always get them in pots, and February is a great time to plant them. And so let me just briefly tell people what kinds of roses they can choose from. The hybrid tea roses are the ones that have that upright growth, and they get kind of a single bloom, you know, on the end of each stem. And those are the ones that we typically, you know, pick for, you know, that single bud in a vase that looks so perfect, right? Then there are floribundas, and those are the roses that send out clusters of blooms. So, you know, at the end of a stem, you might have six different or eight different blooms, and those are really pretty in the landscape because when they bloom, you've got these, you know, numerous clusters, and so you get a lot of color. But they aren't quite as good for picking, you know, and bringing in the house as the hybrid teas. Although I pick them and I love them, they don't necessarily last in the vase quite as long as the hybrid teas, but I think they look beautiful.
They're stunning.
Yeah. And then, of course, there are the climbers. So if you have an arbor or a trellis or a wall that you want covered in roses, then you can choose a climber. And then there are the what we call the English roses, and those have kind of those cabbage, really puffy forms, and often are highly scented. David Austin is a, you know, more modern brand of the English type of roses, and those do really well here. And then there's one last one called Grandiflora, which is a cross between a hybrid tea and the floribunda. And so it is more upright like the hybrid teas, but the blossoms will be, the blooms will have more than one on the end of a stem. So I love those. My favorite Grandiflora rose is Fame. It's a hot pink, and it almost looks artificial. The petals are so, you know, they're just firm. You know how some roses are kind of floppy petals and delicate? This Fame rose is just this real firm, bright pink. The drawback is it has no scent, but the blossoms last on the bush, a month. Probably each bloom lasts for about a month. It's
you know,
just
nice about those.
Stunning.
You could also see them from a distance.
Yeah, because you sat in my family room and you can they knock your eyes out from inside the house.
If you want to see something focal point a distance away, they don't disappear.
Yeah, exactly. So those that just gives folks a little bit of information when they're choosing a rose. Those are the different kind of categories. And then when you see a particular variety, especially if you have your phone with you, just type in the name and see if it's a disease-resistant variety. You know, some are more prone to powdery mildew and rust than others.
I just get disease-resistant.
Yeah,
so
try and look.
Unless you have a lot of time to take care of them.
Yeah. Or go to a good nursery where they have, you know, rose experts and just say, hey, I want a yellow rose. I want it to be 4 feet max height. What would you suggest? And they'll have some great recommendations for you. The other thing to plant in the way of flowers, we talked about the annuals that you could grow from seed, but the other thing to plant now that would give you color are some summer blooming bulbs. And one of my favorites and easiest to grow are gladiolus, kind of a a bulb from our mother's era, don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I think we all grew up with Glads, and they've kind of disappeared, I think.
They disappeared, went out of fashion, and I think they're coming back in.
I think so. They never went out of fashion with me because I love tall flowers, and that's what you get with Glads. Those bloom stalks are, you know, 4 feet tall, and they're pretty stunning.
They are beautiful.
Yeah. They are prone to thrips, which is a little tiny bug that... kind of disfigures the leaves a little bit, and it can get inside the blossoms and disfigure those. But once the leaves are up, I usually just spray them once with insecticidal soap, which is a, you know, pretty benign product, and it kills by smothering insects. And so I do that once the leaves are up, but before the bloom stalks form, just to make sure that the thrips aren't going to ruin my show. And but I love them. And talk about flowers you can cut and bring in the house. Man, you get five of those in a vase. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah.
You know, and they're so pretty outside. I don't want to cut them, too. So I'm always, you know, it's like, do I want them outside or inside? But Tina grows so many, you don't notice there's many missing outside.
Yeah.
Because she's got so many.
Well, the cool thing about that I like about Glads is they come back every year. And so I don't think I've planted new Glads in probably 3 years, but I still have Glads every year because of the ones I planted before. So if you want something that comes back, and when I go out and I dig up an area to replant, you know, a shrub or whatever, I'll you know, discover, you know, a pile of these under the ground, and they generally have multiplied, so then you just break them apart and spread them around in the garden. So, and they come in all colors, so that's pretty fun too.
And they're easy to grow.
They're so easy to grow.
You want easy? Do these.
Yeah, super, super easy. And then the other thing to get ready to plant, but I usually wait until early March, but think about dahlias. Dahlias are another fabulous spring or summer blooming, not really a bulb. They're actually a tuber, if we want to be technically correct, but they're kind of grouped with the bulbs, and you'll find them in the bulb section of the nursery.
And they're so pretty.
Oh, I love dahlias.
I love dahlias too. Just so gorgeous.
And they do well here. They're, I think, native to Mexico. So, you know, California, Mexico. Kind of
also
similar. Similar. Also
very, very good.
Yeah. So, yeah. So those are some other colorful things you can add to your garden.
Well, Tina, we're getting close to wrapping up here. Is there anything you want to finish up with for this month?
Let's see. Maybe... let's just talk briefly about composting, maybe.
Okay.
Because you're going to be cleaning up your yard, getting ready to plant your warm season stuff in March, as you are, and of course, you know, while we've had these rains and winds and winter weather, there's probably just a bunch of stuff, you know, that's around the garden. So as you clean up your garden, consider composting. Consider getting a compost bin. Putting your yard waste, you know, if you still have a lawn, your grass clippings can go in there. The leaves from your trees. Goodness, I always have plenty of compost material because of the sycamores, which drop endless numbers of leaves. But it's a good time whenever you're doing a cleanup to consider starting a compost pile. You're going to be wanting this month and next month to take a look at your perennials that you have in your yard, trim those up, cut out any dead branches. And so as you do all of that cleaning up, why not keep the stuff and reuse it in the form of compost in your yard?
And you can go look at our website, and we have lots of information about that.
We do. There's even a video on our website about composting. So, or at least there was. I hope it's still there.
I think it's still there. But Check us out or look at our hotline. You know, give our hotline a call if you have any questions. And I think we're about right there for the month, Tina.
Great.
Can you believe the time went so fast?
I know. I always yak away, and before you know it, the hour is up.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to us, and we really appreciate your time. And, Tina, thank you so much for your time and wisdom. And this is Katrina and Tina with UCCE Master Gardeners wishing you a happy month.
Thanks.